Hi, I'm Dan Leonard in the East.
And I'm George Whittam in the West.
And together we are East West Audio Body Shop. Well, Jimmy Fallon has nothing on E-Webs because we bring out all the stars, too. This week, we've got another superstar from the voiceover world, Townsend Coleman. You've heard him doing animation. He's been the voice of Michelangelo from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Batman and a bunch of other things and lots of stuff that you're familiar with. He'll be here and tell us about his great career.
Excited, man. What a cool guy. I love him so much. I'm going to be focusing on your questions this week, so please send them in. We'd love to have them. We've got a couple in the queue, but we'd love to get some more stuff, so send those in to ewabshop@gmail.com.
And in my tip of the week, we'll talk about studio monitors, which everybody always asks about. That and the eWabs news. That's all this Monday night, 9 o'clock in the East.
And 6 o'clock in the West.
He's the home voiceover studio engineer to the stars in Los Angeles, California. A Virginia Tech grad whose knowledge of the latest recording gear is second to none. He's a voice actor and the home studio master, hailing from Buffalo, New York. His home studio skills and knowledge of voiceover recording is unmatched. When Dan and George talk shop, people listen, and the talk continues tonight. Welcome to East West Audio Body Shop. And now, live from his high-tech facility in Santa Monica and his penthouse studio in Buffalo, here are George Whittam and Dan Leonard.
Good evening. I'm Dan Leonard in the East.
And I'm George Whittam in the West.
And together we are East West Audio Body Shop. Well, welcome. It's starting to look a lot like November here at East West Audio Body Shop. Mm-hmm. The leaves are all down here in Buffalo. Of course, the leaves never fall in Southern California.
Not exactly true, but that's why there's a town called Thousand Oaks and another one called Sherman Oaks. Those trees actually do drop their leaves eventually.
I know, because I'm going to have to rake them up.
That's right.
Anyway, we have a fantastic show for you tonight. Not that every other show isn't fantastic, especially fantastic.
Fantastic-er.
Every week, because our guest tonight is a great guy, a man who whose voice you hear almost constantly. It's like he lives in your living room. Townsend Coleman will be our guest tonight. He's going to talk about his great career and all the stuff that he's doing and what he wants to do, and a little tech stuff, too. Just a little bit.
Dan, speaking of tech stuff, are your speakers turned up?
Are my speakers turned up? They are not.
Okay, because I'm hearing something echoing from somewhere, and I know I have Townsend muted.
Yeah.
And my speakers are turned off.
And my headphones, does that help if I'm covering my headphones?
I don't know. We're just hearing the minorest of minor of slapback. So I think I think it's gone now.
Okay. That's good.
Yeah.
Who are our
sponsors?
Yes, we have our sponsors. We've got to thank them. We have to thank, of course, Harlan Hogan, the one and only Harlan Hogan over at VoiceOver Essentials. VoiceOver Essentials, Edge Studio, a brand new sponsor. VoiceSam. We're going to talk about VoiceSam. Great stuff. They have decided that they want to talk to you, and in order to talk to you, they've come to us to talk to you.
Cool.
So Bob Merkel over at VoiceSam is joining us. And, of course, VoiceOver Extra. Go read it. All right.
Let's take a look at the news.
So it's time for
that little clip of the news that I dropped into the show player that isn't there anymore. So imagine a plane flying around. No, wait a minute. A radio tower with a little. Wow, let's take a look at the news.
It's now time for EWABS News.
Yeah, so anyway.
You go first, Hugo.
Yeah, let's go with this. Behringer. You know Behringer. Really interesting company out of Germany that manufactures overseas. Interesting products. They're always coming out with something new. And this one really caught my eye because it is basically a tiny, tiny digital mixer that you can squeeze into a small home studio. And if you just don't like having to have scratchy buttons, scratchy mute buttons, knobs that scratch, you know, because they get dirty, this thing does it all in the digital domain. It's called the XR12X Air Mixer. It's pretty cool. You can control this thing with any device you have, iOS, Android, Mac, PC, even Linux. So everything can be controlled from remote. So if you have a studio that you have to send audio to and from more than one place, if you're doing anything over phone patch, over ISDN, or anything more complicated than that, this is a really cool box, and it's $299. So considering what this thing can do, pretty remarkable. So check that thing out. I don't think it comes out to the end of the year, but as soon as I can get my hands on one, I'm going to do a review of one because it's really cool.
Maybe Santa will bring you one. All righty. Also, another piece of news. Our good friend Harlan, who we just talked about before, the man who has been our sponsor since the day we began EWABS, March 22nd, 2011, because he said, you guys are going to be successful at this, and then continued to talk for another half hour. Harlan has a new book out. Harlan Hogan has a new book called Voiceover: Tales and Techniques of a Voiceover Actor. And if you've read any of his other books about voiceover and technology and stuff like that, he has a great sense of humor, and he talks a little bit about what it's like to be a voice actor, and perhaps it will give you some more insight into who he is and how you can make your life better as a voice actor. So, and they can get that over. You can read some excerpts at VoiceOver Extra, from what it says here.
Nice.
So, go over on over there, and John Florian will like hold it up for you on the screen, and you can watch it there. And now we have a special announcement. You grab this. I want
other
to
news.
Do this.
Something that's totally something that's you can talk about it too. But Dan told me that the Tesla Museum that they're opening at Wardenclyffe in New Jersey, right? Isn't that where this one's going to be?
That's where he had his big antenna there.
If you're a Teslaphile and you want to support the building of this museum, as I am a bit of a Teslaphile myself, you can contribute and buy a brick for the construction of this place as a means of a fundraiser for this project. And there's a shortened link that I can read to you. It's igg.me/AT, that's at AT, /bricks-4-Tesla/X. So if you'd like to support that project, that's the link, guys. It's the shortest one I got. So check it out. I love anything that has to do with Tesla. So I'm going to support the project. I can't wait to see the thing come to fruition.
I think we need to have an EWABS brick there.
I think that'd be killer.
Yeah. I think that would be great. Can we get a logo on there? I think we actually.
Heck yeah.
Yeah. So for Jenny Alvarez, that's for you.
That's right. That is for her. Yeah.
Yeah.
She's our fan, our fellow resident Teslaphile.
Oh, she is not a Teslaphile. If Nikola Tesla were still around, he would have to watch out for you. That's the best way to put that out. Wonderful gal. Anyway, we have our new sponsor here, VoiceAm, and Mr. Merkel, who is the proprietor of VoiceAm, would like to tell you a little bit more about it.
It is specifically an audition response mechanism. What do I mean by that? You get a call from a producer or an email, and they want you to do an audition, and they want it by such and such date, and get it back to them. Think of all the problems that can go wrong when you do audition responses. The MP3 files are involved. The final files are involved. Versioning gets involved. Please do another three in a row on this, or can you do it this way? That Oh, did you send that already? ZamFusion solves all that. And you probably might not get it at first, but you'll get it by the end of this. And I'll go quickly. So I just got a request from a producer to do an audition. And so I go to ZamFusion, I create a new playlist. It's really called a playlist. The ZamFusion is just a branding name. So I call it playlist. And now I fill in the contact details, and his name is Pat Producer, or her name. I use a genderless name. Now the project name is Nothing Runs Like a Deer. It's for John Deere. It's a 30-minute TV, and there's no union affiliation involved, and I have no conflicts on that. So there we go. We have the project set up for me and for Pat. So now what? Well, I already did the takes for the auditions. I want to add them to the playlist. So I click Add File. I'm going to choose a file. And for now, I'm just going to use, these three reads again, but it can be really any MP3s you want. So as soon as I added them, they go into the response media, and I can play them.
For comfort and after eight.
I can delete them. I can juggle them around. I can rename them. But keep in mind, this is what Pat is going to see when I send it. Okay? So I only do three takes, and I save it. And I click on preview. And I send this link to Pat. Let's do that. Pat gets it in an email. He opens it up, and this is what he sees, or she sees. Now he plays it.
By the power vested for comfort.
These are your audition takes. He can download any individual one, or he can download the whole thing. That comes down as a zip file that's called Joey Speakeasy, Nothing Runs Like a Deer, 2014-10-11-12.zip. It holds all the information. Now they can take that to their client and play it for them. Now here's the magic. Let's say Pat says to me, you know, Joey, I really like the first three, but can you do maybe three more and do them this way? Sure. Let's do that. I'm going to add this one. And let's add this one. I'm going to move those to the top. And now all I do is save. Now you're thinking, oh, he's got to send that again. No, because I told Pat, give me 10 minutes and then refresh that link. Think about what happened. No versioning, no messy MP3s going back and forth, no MP3 titles back and forth, no dates, no times. We are both, Pat and I, Joey and Pat, are looking at the same project in the cloud. And so when they say change something and I do it, they immediately see the changes. Okay? That's the first thing. Oh, by the way, you can add any kind of file you want. It doesn't necessarily have to be an audio file. In fact, I've got a talent in particular who loves Zamfusion. They are addicted to it, and they call me every 6 weeks and say, you're not planning on getting rid of it, are you? And I say, no, I'm not. And here's why. They then add the finals to the project. So once all the, let's say we take a few out here, so I'm going to delete a couple of these. So these were the ones that were approved. I add the finals. I save it. The finals then appear here. They download it, and now they have their final files. And then the other thing they do, which I think is so clever, as soon as they're done adding the finals, they add the invoice. And now the client sees the invoice and they have to pay it. So isn't that great? So you've got in here all the files, all the finals, and the invoice. The other thing you can do, I didn't show you this, but I'll do that quickly. You can also say, and this guy does this as well, you can say, I want to add my demo. So I want to add my Bob's Retro demo and let's say my documentary demo to this. Save it. Preview it. So here are my demos. These are my full demos.
After 18 months spending.
Great. And now if they click on my name, Joseph Speakeasy.
Greatness is found in.
Up pops my player. So it gives them a really robust way to see who I'm all about, including the audition. And the nice thing about this too, it has an expiration date. So it's set and forget. You set the expiration date. When that date occurs, that project falls off the system and you never see it again. And everybody's happy and you got paid because you sent the invoice. This person probably sends about 5 or 6 of these every week, maybe even 10 a week. So check out Zamfusion. He loves it.
All right. Thank you, Bob Merkel from VoiceZam. And thank you for sponsoring eWabs to make sure that we don't have to get national car spots in here. The Townsend Coleman probably voices. Probably the way that works. Anyway, we got a lot more come up tonight, including Townsend Coleman, who won't do any commercials for us, but he will be here with us. We've got a tip of the week, and we've got a couple of your questions coming up right after this.
whence came these two radiant celestial brothers united for an instant as they crossed the stratosphere of our starry window? One from the east and one from the west.
Very good.
And we're back!
We're back here on East West Audio Body Shop. Okay, we got a couple of questions here. First one is an actual audio question from Andres Berrio.
That's right. It came in from SpeakPipe. Let's see if I can make this work without causing an avalanche of disaster. Here we go.
Hi, guys. My name's Andre. I was hoping you could help me with making a decision. I am very new to the VO industry, trying to break into the industry, and I'm looking to purchase some entry-level equipment. I'm currently using a USB mic made by Samsung, the Samsung Meteor mic. Anyways, it's okay. It's about $69. So I'm recording this message with it. But I have about a $450 budget and looking to purchase an entry-level professional-grade microphone. I was considering the Rode NTA or Rode NT1A, and then coupled with the Focusrite 2i2 preamp and interface. And that would, allow me to purchase that. My budget would allow me to purchase that and record right into my laptop. So if you guys have any recommendations for a different setup, maybe a high-end USB mic or a different XLR coupled with an interface and preamp. So any suggestions would be great. I'd really appreciate your help. Thanks.
All right, man. Go for it, Dan. I know you've got some good suggestions.
That's one we get almost three or four times a day. Andre, it's actually the thing to do is if you're not really experienced with using all this stuff, it's always best to start off with something that's fairly basic. So you learn the basics of one mic technique. So you don't go Peter Piper picked a pike of pickled peppers. Proper mic technique, learning how to set up the acoustics of your room, and most importantly, setting your mic levels, which most USB mics will allow you to do. So if you're just starting out, buying the best equipment isn't necessarily the thing that's going to get you work. This is the thing that we hear constantly. Should I get this preamp? Because this preamp is going to make me sound like Don LaFontaine. I'm sorry, that's not the preamp that does it. It's how the talent you have, your ability to read copy and interpret copy and make it sound like you're not reading it. And no preamp, if you spent billions, unless it has auto-tune and it completely changes your voice, it's not going to change anything.
All right, right now he's using a $70 USB mic. So what would be the next?
And he sounded fine.
Yeah, I know.
He was using a Meteor, right?
I know. I have that mic. I bought it because it was super cheap. And I, Mr. Cheap, I like to find really cheap stuff that works much better than it really should. And that's one of those pieces of gear. But, you know, if he really wants to spend $450, I mean, Scarlett is an obvious choice, right?
Right.
Scarlett
2i2.
The new Scarlett Solo.
It's
$99, right? So Scarlett Solo from Focusrite. And, fill in the blank $250 mic. We can't go wrong with Harlan's mic. I mean, we'd be remiss to not mention the VO1A.
Yeah, absolutely.
It sounds fantastic. From AT, like the 4040, or if you want to save a little bit of dough, the 2035.
2035, great
sounds
mic.
Sounds fantastic. There's a lot of fantastic mics for under the $100 to $300 range. I could just name 50 mics that sound surprisingly good for that kind of.
But when we first heard that question, we're like, "Hey, sounds great using that Meteor."
I know. A little bit of mic technique adjustment, and
you'll be fine.
Yeah, sounds surprisingly good.
So hopefully that answers his question.
Yeah, I know. Don't get too concerned, but it'd be a nice thing to upgrade. And the other thing is with going with the Scarlett is it has monitoring. You could actually the Samsung has monitoring too. Actually, now that I think about it, $69 or whatever. This one's from Sanjo Ugoncie. I hope that's the way you say your name. I apologize if it's not. His question is about connecting the Apollo Twin Duo to a hardware mixer. So, for those that don't know what the Apollo Twin Duo is it sort of like an Apogee Duet? Well, let's put it this way: it's a really fancy Scarlett 2i2 or stereo input output device. It just happens to have a lot of processing built into it for people that want on-the-air stuff. and want to have their processing in the chain. But anyway, thanks for the opportunity to send in your questions. I have been using the 2i2 with an external Mackie mixer and a DBX compressor with good results for Skype sessions that require me to play back my recordings to clients. I recently got the Apollo Twin Duo, but can't seem to work out how to connect it to the Mackie mixer and use the plugins that come with the Apollo in real time with the mixer connected. Is there a way to play back my recordings over Skype with the Apollo without a hardware mixer, i.e. using the Apollo's virtual console to do the routing? And how do I connect the Apollo to my Mackie mixer to work like it works with, oh, it's funny he mentions it, a 2i2. At this time, I get a muffled sound. Hope to hear your thoughts soon. Whew, that's a lot to answer in a few minutes on a show like this. Normally, for a setup like what you're doing, Sanjo, I would do a schematic. So what I do is I take all the equipment involved, I put it all into a designer software on my computer, and I literally draw lines and diagrams showing you the correct signal flow. And I set up my entire I have an overview of the mixing console. Everything that's involved I have on the screen, maybe sometimes two pages, and I will set knobs and diagrams showing you exactly where everything should be set. So it's probably a little bit too heavy of a thick of a question right now to answer in a short segment here. But basically the signal flow is mic, then Apollo Twin, because that's your preamp, and then the output to the Apollo Twin into the mixer. So anything that you're recording or playing back is going to come out of the Apollo Twin outputs. So as long as they're feeding a stereo in on the Mackie mixer, and you have that feeding to Skype through a different audio device, that is the trick. That's the trick. That's probably the thing you're probably missing. You need to have a dedicated audio device just for Skype that you can send audio to and from, and send that to another input and output on your Mackie mixer. But honestly, you can almost pull it off without the mixer itself, and I'd be happy to explain to you how to do it.
Yeah, it's I think, again, this is somebody overthinking the whole thing because they can.
Yeah, I mean, basically he's taking his old chain, which is the DBX, probably a 286 or something, and kind of trying to take it to the next level, which is going with the Apollo. And if you can... Where it gets confusing is the Apollo is not just the preamp, but it's also the AD converter, and it's the playback device all in one thing. And that's a different kind of workflow. So summary, microphone, Apollo, Mackie, and then an aux send out to another audio device, maybe the line in, line out of your Mac, and dedicate that for Skype duties. So we'd be happy to get into the details, just not, and this isn't the time or the place. So look me up at vostudiotech.com. So, alrighty. Dan, what do you got?
I have a tip of the week, not very long, but everybody's like, well, what's the best way to monitor your audio? Well, let's see.
What's going on? Did I miss something?
The tip of the week.
Oh, I was. I was going to the next thing in the sequence, which was from Jerry Reed, but we're skipping that. Okay.
Oh, okay.
Sorry about that. So that's tip of the week, studio monitors. See, my brain went into, I'm going to read the chat room now while Dan talks mode. Okay, here we go with the tip of the week.
So how do you monitor your audio? This is probably one of the biggest arguments in the business. Should you wear headphones, or should you listen on computer speakers, listen on whatever it is the end user is going to be using? This is the way I look at it. You want to be able to hear exactly what it is you recorded. And the best way to do that is with studio monitors. They are what is called close field monitors. Now, what that means is you don't sit far away from them. You sit very close to them, probably within 2 to 3 feet.
Specialty fixtures. It wouldn't be the photography industry if there wasn't a light for just about any purpose.
Okay, So as you hear, they deliver back exactly what it is I recorded. But they have to be set up properly in your studio and next to your computer. The area you work in, your workstation, they should be about at ear level, and they should both be about 30 degrees of an angle towards your ears. So you're sitting about like that. But also, the room has to be somewhat dampened in order for them to sound true as well, because you want to hear it back in the acoustics in which pretty much you recorded them in, or at least a neutral room where you won't have it bouncing all over the place. A lot of people make the mistake of using studio monitors in a room that's very reflective and then thinking they've got all sorts of room reflection, when in reality it's just where the room they're listening to them in. So why don't I like headphones? I don't know, probably the same reason I don't like squash. It always sounds so good the way people describe it until I taste it. For you squash lovers, I'm really sorry. The problem with headphones is they don't really have the power to really give you the true reproduction that you require. Plus, they're playing little games with the acoustics in your head, and I find unless you have a really good, expensive pair of headphones, like George does, it's not going to help you that much. The studio monitors work much better. I mean, just listen to this.
Using this lens, you can focus the projected beam of light. These spots are coveted by filmmakers and photo experts.
See, it's a little bit more thin. So that's my tip for the week. Studio monitors. Doesn't really matter which brand, just not really cheap ones.
Yeah, that one's an oldie but a goodie. Of course, you can now use the Harlan Hogan Signature Series headphones. There's his spot for the week.
Exactly.
Those are actually pretty good. And those hadn't been brought out on the market yet. But yeah, studio monitors, really, they're pretty essential for doing voice work, because you'll hear things much, much better. By the way, do you have like Beaker in front of you there from the Muppets?
Me.
Yeah, I have what they call in the industry a dead cat on my microphone. It's these are what they put on microphones for exterior use when it's really, really windy. It was just laying on my desk, so I just threw it on the mic. I thought it was funny. Yeah. It's my Halloween costume for my mic.
There you go.
But the other caveat is sometimes you can't get your monitors loud enough because you're in a house with other people, or you have an apartment on the other wall. You know, on the other side of the wall, and you're going to piss off the neighbor. And when you have to hear the quietest details sometimes, you might need to run them louder than comfortable. So that's where headphones could be helpful. You can put them on when you need to hear really quiet mouth noises. And when you're editing audiobooks, I kind of tend to lean towards the idea of using headphones, because generally they are consumed in headphones. So you're listening to it the way the end user probably will be. So it may not be a bad idea, but you can go either way, but make sure that what you're hearing really is there. Make sure that you're not hearing something in the background that is being heard along with your speakers. I have a long-winded version of this answer on Whittem's World. So you can go on YouTube, check out Whittem's World, episode 46.
46.
And right. You know, give it a look. You can hear my opinion.
All right. Mm-hmm. Enough of this. We have a great guest coming up. Not that this stuff isn't important, not that you guys don't tune in to hear this stuff, but we got a guy you want to hear from. So we'll get to him in just a minute, right here at East West Audio Body Shop. Townsend Coleman is almost in the house.
VO Studio Tech. Recording made simple.
Hi, I'm Peter McHugh.
This is Jim Tasker from Los Angeles, California.
Hi, this is Bill Ratner in Los Angeles.
Hi, this is Scott Rummel here in Yorba Linda, California.
Hi, my name is Rick Wasserman.
Hi, this is Tom Kane.
Hi, my name is Vanessa Marshall.
Hi, my name is Zurich.
Hi, I'm Mary McKittrick.
Randy Thomas chiming in.
Hi, this is Joe Szymanski.
Hey, this is Rick Robles.
Hi, my name is John Patrick Armstrong.
I was turned on to George by none other than Don LaFontaine, who always swore by his helmet.
George is absolutely awesome.
ISDN, Source Connect, Phone Patch, FTP, you name it, George has set it up.
It's really the best thing I've ever done for myself. I feel
free, safe, fearless, like anything is possible in here.
Unless you like to look for opportunities to waste time, call George.
Danny did all of that, long distance over the phone and the internet.
I'm very happy with George, and I cherish him.
Thanks, George. You make it easy.
Hey guys, this is Tom, also known as the voice of SpongeBob SquarePants, and you want to fill your ear holes and your eye holes with Dan and George and the East West Audio Body Shop. Ah! Meow. Snails like it too.
I'm laughing because you guys aren't hearing what Townsend's doing off camera.
We're back here at East West Audio Body Shop. And if you can't tell, we've got a great guest joining us from Glendale, California. It's all the same, I'm discovering. It's all Los Angeles. Townsend Coleman, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Talk to the hand.
Talk to the hand.
Welcome to the show.
How goes it? Having a good time here, boys?
We're having a great time. First, I got to tell you, I get confused a lot because my son's track coach's name is Coleman Townsend.
Shut up.
Are you kidding me?
Now you're going to get me confused.
I know.
Listen, my full name actually is Townsend, and this is true. A lot of people think that I made this name up, but it's Townsend Putnam Coleman the Third.
Wow, too many syllables.
I have no first name, so I have just nothing but last names in there.
Your name has too many syllables like our show.
Yes.
Right.
All righty. Well, welcome to the show. And we've been wanting to have you on for a long time, and now we got you here, and now we have absolutely nothing to talk about. But no, we're...
except George's roadkill mic cover there.
Yeah, really. But now, you've had a fabulous career, and... you've done just about everything there. I mean, you've done. I mean, people know you from.
Just read the credits.
I'm reading them. He is the voice of the original Michelangelo on the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles from 1987 to 1996. What a gig!
Holy crap!
He is the voice of the title character, the Tick, the 1994 cartoon series and Annie Award nominated show.
Oh.
The voice of Corporal Capeman. In Inspector Gadget, which apparently a lot of people remember.
That's nuts to me that people remember that show. That's the first show I did. I got that in 1985. It's like, what?
Wow. Wasn't that originally with, what's his name?
Don Adams.
Don Adams from Get Smart.
It was Inspector Gadget.
Wow. And a great talent himself, too.
Yeah.
Currently, you're doing some TV comedy promo and work for ABC. And you're a busy guy.
Well, I try to stay busy. Yeah, sure. You know, knock on here. I have been able to eke out a living, you know, doing this silly stuff for about 40 years now. So yeah, I'm having a good old time.
Yeah. Now you're like me. You came out of broadcasting. Tell us a little bit about how you made this journey from Cleveland to Hollywood.
Yeah, well, the journey from Cleveland to Hollywood was a real quick one, 30 years ago in 1984. But before that, I'd always been really intrigued about radio. My dad used to be in radio. In fact, my parents met working at NBC in New York City at 30 Rock.
Wow.
In the early 50s, got married in the early 50s, had me in 1954. And my dad was managing the page department, what they call guest relations, at 30 Rock there at NBC, but wanted to be a network announcer. And back in those days, they had a school for that you had to go through, and he didn't do it. And so he moved us all to Denver. But he got on the radio and got me kind of clued into radio and audio and sound and radio theater and drama and stuff at a real early age. And so when I was in junior high and high school, did a lot of theater and always wanted to get into radio. Quit college in 1974 and went and applied at a radio station in 75 and got hired, you know, with no experience, doing it cheap. And that kind of launched to what ended up being only a 10-year radio career in Cleveland, because I wasn't one of these jocks that, you know, was going to, who wanted it badly enough that he was going to go to El Paso. And so I ended up working at five different stations over the course of the 10 years in Cleveland, but was doing a lot of theater and a lot of TV at the time, and a lot of modeling in Cleveland, and as well as the radio, but got into voiceovers on top of it. And back in the early 80s, I started realizing that I was doing better, making more money a year in doing my voiceover, freelance voiceover stuff, than I was at the radio station working 6 days a week, and it didn't make sense to me. So I quit that in 84, and then through a weird series of events, ended up finding myself living here in California 3 months after I quit that radio career in June of 84. And been here 30 years now, and I'm still digging it.
Well, it's a fun business.
It's a fascinating business. Yeah.
Now you do two different things in the industry. I mean, we talked a little bit about the animation. We'll get back into that a little bit. But you were doing a lot of promo work too. Did one lead to the other, or did they just sort of happen simultaneously or in parallel? Or
yeah, well, they sort of happen in steps. Actually, when I first started doing VO work here in LA, it was in commercials. Which was really my background. You know, I thought that this is where, if I'm going to do a VO, is where I'm going to, you know, make my money. And with no thought to doing cartoons, but it was in March of 85 that I had done a little part in a movie with Tommy Lee Jones. I had three lines in this thing as a waiter. And then also did my first on-camera national TV spot for Kraft Barbecue Sauce. But then also got this funky audition for a cartoon called Inspector Gadget. And they were creating a new character right at the end of the series, the last 10 episodes of the series, named Corporal Caveman. And so I went and auditioned for this thing, having, you know, never given any thought to really doing cartoons. And I got this part and found myself sitting in the first session a week later with Maurice LaMarche, then Frank Welker, and then me, and then Don Adams. Wow. And I would just looked around with shaking my head going, how in the world did this happen? But I had so much fun. As I told my agent, please send me out for more of this stuff. And so I went and did a general over at Hanna-Barbera and started doing some auditions and started booking some shows. And that took me sort of, you know, my commercial career and voiceover career was doing fine. But then, you know, had this animation leg to it. And then the promo a component, the sort of the third leg of that three-legged stool for me, didn't come until 93 when, again, as sort of a fluky audition, I happened to be standing in my agent's office when he got a call from a guy over at NBC looking for a specific voice type, which I did. And so he handed me the phone. I did a little for the guy over the phone, and he said, can you come over and try this on a promo? And I said, yeah, sure, when? He said, now. So I went over from ICM over to Burbank, sat in the chair at NBC and tried my first promo. It turned out to be the first must-see TV comedy promo in August of 93. And then kind of took off from there. So I had this promo thing going and this animation thing going and this commercial thing going kind of all simultaneously. And yeah, it was pretty okay.
No, that wasn't just a sudden thing, though, that you were like, hey, you think I'll do some animation, and they just grabbed you off the street. I mean, were you taking classes, or were you doing a lot of characters on the radio? What led you?
Yeah, that's the thing, Dan. I wasn't one of these kids that was growing up saying, you know, I want to be one of those. I want to make some funny voices for a living. It just wasn't me, you know. And I never thought I had a voice for promo. So I always thought if I'm going to do anything in voiceover, it's going to be in commercial. But because of that first show, Inspector Gadget, sort of taken off the way it did for me, I started just auditioning for more shows, and you know, got real fortunate. And I had done characters on the radio for morning shows, you know, back in Ohio, and I was doing a lot of theater at the time, you know, and was doing a bunch of musicals, was doing singing. The last show that I did in Cleveland before moving out here was Pirates of Penzance. I was Frederick in that. So, ooh. Yeah. So, I mean, I had I had enough, I think, underneath me to, you know, sort of be thrown in to that ring, you know. Unfortunately for me at the time, ignorance was bliss, because, you know, I didn't realize when I sat in that studio at that first Inspector Gadget session, who Maurice LaMarche was. I didn't know who Frank Welker was, even though these guys were sitting right next to me. I didn't realize that, even though it was Moe's, that was his first cartoon as well. you know, hear Frank Welker, you know, the king of animation sitting next to me. And I just I was unaware.
That's probably a good thing, right?
Until he opened his mouth and I realized who he was. Holy cow.
Yeah, we all have that story. That's how I got to know Donald Fontaine. That's another story.
Yeah. So same sort of thing, you know, got to know Don over at NBC, you know, and I was there for all those years. So.
Well, tell us a little bit about your stuff with Don.
With Don?
Yeah.
You know, honestly, there's not much to tell because I didn't really have a relationship with Don, you know, like George did or, you know, Joseph did and Paul Pape and these guys. I just knew Don sort of peripherally, you know, from promo. And then once I got into the promo world over at NBC and ended up being there for 16 years doing all their comedy promos and the Tonight Show promos, Don was doing all the drama in those days. And so our paths would overlap and I would see him and we'd chat a little bit. But Don was always funny, you know, because, you know, he was, you know, he had his limo and his driver. And he would, you know, when he was done with his session, I would sort of be sitting there in the back, you know, at the table, you know, watching him work his magic. And then when he was done, he'd pick up the phone and, you know, dial Clinton and all he'd say was, "Let's go." Hang up the phone. And then that was it. You know, he'd get up, you know, and leave. We would chat occasionally a little bit, but, you know, I got to know him a little over at his house when he'd have Christmas parties or promo parties. And, it's just a real sweetheart of a guy, but, you know, back in those days too, George, obviously, you know, this, you know, all this stuff, but, you know, he would take guys, you know, young guys, who were just sort of breaking into the business, in his limo to kind of, you know, give them, limo's eye view of, you know, what it was like in the day of Don LaFontaine, in a day of Don LaFontaine. And, you know, and I heard about this and I remember he asked me at one point early on when we first met, and it turned out that he was a fan of The Tick. And I didn't realize that until he got to talking about it and he started quoting lines from the show. And I'm like, holy cow, Don LaFontaine watches this cartoon series that I did. But he invited me along and, you know, frankly, and I hate to admit this, but I was intimidated to spend the day in a, you know, in the limo with Don, sort of, you know, tailing him around. You know, I wanted to very much, but I just didn't. I don't know what it was. Maybe I didn't feel like I deserved it or what. And so I begged off and I said, thank you. I really appreciate it. You know, thinking, well, maybe another time. Of course, another time never came.
Oh, wow. You know, I had no idea. I had no idea about that part of your story, man. It was really
good. It's a big regret of mine because I wish that I had had more whatever to be able to say, yeah, you know what, I'd love to, because I would have loved to.
Yeah, it's I feel in a weird way, and I didn't have a reason to ever do that with him, and I didn't know him back when he did that, but I never, you know, silly things happen. I never took a photo with him. I never did a selfie. I never ever took a picture with the guy, you know, and that's one of those little things. It's like, you look back and you're like, I can't believe I never took a picture.
It's like, how could I not have done that?
I know every year when his birthday comes around, everybody's posting their pictures with Don. I'm like, God, I don't have that picture, you know?
Right.
That was the same story for me when I first met him. I didn't know who the heck he was. I had no clue who he was. Walked into his studio and he's like, I got to pop in the booth for a second. And he does a Simpson spot or something. I'm just like,
opens his mouth and that voice comes out. Just go.
It's so true. I can totally identify with that.
Well, not jumping in the limo didn't hurt your career, apparently. So,
No.
You decided to support the lab, man. I mean, something. There must have been something that impacted you for you'd want to support the lab.
Yes. But I have to say, it was Joe Cipriano. You know, because Joe and Paul Pape, you know, were the guys, you know, behind this whole thing. And Joseph had called me up one day and said, this is what we're doing. And he, you know, described the whole process. And I thought, holy cow, it's like, these guys are such visionaries. What a beautiful thing to do for such a beautiful guy. You know, what a great way, not only to remember him, but to sort of carry on his legacy of giving, because that's what he was all about. It's like offering the limo rides. You know, he cared about us, and he cared about this business, and he cared about voice actors. He loved theater and loved singing and loved the voice and the actors who brought that to life. And so when Joe and when Joseph and Paul Pape and you, George, were putting this thing together, and Joe described it to me, I said, "Yeah, absolutely, sign me up." You know, what can I do? And so,
thank you.
That's how I was lucky enough to, you know, be part of it sort of from the get go.
Appreciate it so much.
Yeah. Now, like a lot of people in California, you go down to the studios and stuff, but you are auditioning out of your home studio now, or your personal studio.
Oh, Dan, let me tell you, man. First of all, I don't go to studios anymore, not because I don't want to, because I wish I could. But all my work now has sort of been oddly distilled in the last couple of years down to pretty much promo. Little bit of commercial. I'm really not doing animation anymore. You know, an occasional project when somebody will bring me in as a incidental on something, and it's always fun to do. But really, my daily driver is promo, and it's all out of my house. It's all out of this sparkling state of the art closet studio that I have here, and. Yeah. So,
what are you using in there? What's your gear chain? I know it's not complicated, but
no, it is. It is dirt simple, George. I use the 416 mic, which is the only thing I ever use. Although I tell you, I do have a large diaphragm blue baby bottle, which I very much like, but I never use it. I never have occasion to use it. You know, everything that I do is with a 416, and it's plugged into a TC Electronic. Get that TC. Electronic, yeah,
TC.
So it's a TC Electronic Gold Channel is all it is. You know, a single rack space, a digital mic pre, and I love it to pieces for a bunch of reasons. Well, I like the sound of it. It's really simple to operate, but the digital outs of it, I've got the AES EBU digital out going into my ISDN box, and then I've got the Toslink optical digital out coming into the back of my iMac. And so I never print anything. I read all my copy right off my computer screen right here. And I mean, guys, that's it. So I've got my ISDN box, my mic pre, my headphone amp, and then a power strip that's got one switch on it. You know, so when it's time for a session, I come in, I hit the one switch, it powers those, you know, couple of things up. And I've got a little Mackie mixer on top of the rack here just for monitoring. But, but other than that, it's, you know, listen, I'm pretty basic when it comes. I, you know, George and I were talking earlier. I used to be a bit of a gear slut years ago, but now it's like whatever works and keeping it simple. And the kind of work that I do, which is all promo, doesn't require, you know, a super quiet room. I've got a gate on my mic pre here. You know, but I mean, I got the gardener, you know, hacking away outside every so often. The garbage truck's coming on Friday morning, you know, with their backup beeps. And
do you ever take advantage of the multi, you know, the fact that it can have a lot of presets? Do you have like two modes, like a promo mode and a trailer mode or like whatever? Do you bother with that?
Well, I do have two modes, but only the one mode that I use 99% of the time. The only other mode that I've got a preset, I mean, I've got a bunch of presets that I've made, but I never use them.
Right.
But this one, every so often. Hold on.
We're not hearing you through the
good
mic
evening,
right
Mr.
now.
And Mrs. America and all the ships at sea. You know, it's just simply one of these, it's almost like the old time radio. What would you call it? It's almost like, over a telephony, thing.
Yeah, it's sort of a narrow EQ band thing,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, very much like this. So, you know, if somebody wants them, oh my goodness, it's, you know, one of those.
Yeah, exactly.
All the humanity.
Exactly. So, I mean, that's, I did use that. And, you know, a lot of times, we're not doing them anymore because I launched a cable network called The Hub about 4 years ago. And then they just changed to be Discovery Channel or Discovery Family Channel, which is what they are now. But I used to do a lot of promos for them. And what was so great about doing stuff for them is they wanted me to use my characters and wacky announcers and stuff like that. Just because of the type of promos we were doing for their shows. And so that kind of thing I would use all the time, you know, and what I love too about, well, my little setup here, because it literally is my closet. And then there's, and then my bathroom is right there. So I, if I need, you know, I can always get off schedule. Hey, what's going on over there? Come on, you guys. I said, come on, stop it. No, you stop it. No, you stop it. Stop it now. No, you stop. Stop it, I said, stop.
Well, all I can say is if you don't have another one of those TCs sitting in your closet, you should probably find one and keep it handy because they don't make them anymore, and it'd be nice to have a spare because if that thing craps out on you, you're going to be...
Oh, God, you know, you just jinxed it, George.
I totally jinxed you. Well,
you just jinxed it by saying that this thing's going to crap out on me.
As a guy who supports studios and works with a client who has that and has had to replace the thing, I just...
Oh, no.
Just saying, just go get another one on eBay. They're $500 or so. Just, you know, cheap insurance. That's all I got to say.
eBay.
I'll just keep it in my sock drawer.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
Well, you're not the only person I know making a really good living next to your socks and shoes and pants and shirts and stuff.
Yeah. You guys are lucky. I actually put pants on tonight for this interview. Not that I needed to. But.
No, there were questions in the chat room about that. If you were actually wearing pants so.
Tonight, I am. But I along with the rest of us who do this from our closets or whatever, have probably been known to wear less at times.
Yeah, we know that's true of Maurice LaMarche.
Yes.
Actually, heard him quote that.
Especially. he'll even do it when he hops in his Lexus down to, you know, a studio in Santa Monica. Oh, my God, I forgot my pants.
No, but he says in class, you know, I forgot my pants.
In his Lexus voice. December to remember sales pants event.
That's right.
So wear your pen there.
So what do you got going on right now? I mean, you're doing promos. Right. You're working on any other interesting projects?
Yeah, it's all my work life is all promo. I do the daily promos for Live with Kelly and Michael. Now, I've been doing them for a bunch of years, back when they were still Regis and Kelly. Made that transition, which is always a bit of a trick in this business, you know, because you can have an account for, you know, a good while, and then, you know, somebody, it's like, you know, well, Dan, you would know, it's like back in the radio days. You know, the station would get changed, you know, get bought or sold, or maybe not even that. They just, the ratings were down. And so you're going in another direction.
Yes.
Get rid of the PD. A new PD would come in, clean house. You know, you'd find out, you know, 5 minutes before you went on the air that you weren't going on the air. So those kinds of things happen. And, you know, if you're lucky enough to make those transitions over the hump to the new regime, then it's pretty okay. So I've been lucky in this business, you know, to make those transitions often, not all the time, of course, but often enough, you know, just to appreciate the, you know, the ups and downs and the ebbs and flows of this business. So, wow. Yeah, so I'm doing the Live with Kelly and Michael spots now. And, you know, I was with NBC for a long time, 16 years when I doing their must-see TV campaign in 93. And then about two or three months later, they tossed the Tonight Show promos to me over Halloween weekend of 93. Wow. And it was only supposed to be a 5-week gig just for the November sweeps. And at the end of 5 weeks, they just never told us to stop. And so I kept doing the Tonight Show promos along with all the comedy promos as well, the primetime stuff, for NBC for 16 years until September of 2009. So 5 years ago was the end of that ride for me, but had to be the best ride, the most fun, the most, you know, incredible people to work with. And, you know, I miss them to this day. But a lot of them have gone on to, you know, other things, other networks. It's one of the reasons why I'm at ABC Family now. I do a lot of promos for ABC Family. And I'm on ABC now, you know, because of, you know, former NBC folks over there who have been kind enough to, you know, bring me on board again. So
outstanding.
Never burn a bridge.
Yeah. Man, never burn a bridge. Yeah. Try not to, at least. And if you do, do it constructive. You know, it's just not, it's not a good idea. And it's not constructive. And I've burned a few in my time, but boy, I hate it. You know, you always look back with regret on those things.
Absolutely. Well, we've got a bunch of questions from our studio audience coming up here. And if you got any, just, you know, throw them into the chat room and we'll, we'll answer them. But in the meantime, we're going to take a quick break here. We'll be right back with the amazing Townsend Coleman. Don't go away.
All right, let's talk about voiceover essentials from Harlan Hogan. He is an awesome, awesome supporter of the show. He's been with us from day one. And what does he do? Well, voiceoveressentials.com is a great resource for anything voiceover. So anything. I mean, if you are a voice actor that needs any gear for the studio or any educational content in terms of books, whatever, it really is about the best one-stop shop website that is in existence for the voice actor. VoiceOverEssentials.com has little things from a headphone hanger. I mean, little goofy stuff that you wouldn't think normally
really goofy
is a big deal. But, you know, how many times have you dropped your freaking headphones on the floor because you're always hanging them on something that's not quite the right thing, you know, and boom.
There they go, right there.
I have dropped my headphones 50 times. You know, he's got stuff like that. But then he's also got some of the more high-end gear that's some of the stuff that, you know, maybe you aspire to need or don't need now but may need someday, like this mixer face. Which right. I think it's coming out, man. It's one of those pieces of gear that we've been anticipating for a while.
When it gets here, hopefully it will be worth it.
I think it's going to be worth it because they've been very patient to release it. Not until it's really fully baked, but this piece of gear is like the ultimate portable recording device for people that use iPhones that lets you record from the road. It's going to be fantastic if you really have to do a lot of on the road recording. So. The mixer face is one of those more advanced pieces that he carries. But he carries everything from a $10 gadget or a little pop screen to an $800 interface and everything in between. So a really great resource for every voice actor and a great place to go Christmas shopping.
So, oh, absolutely. He'll have some great holiday shopping specials coming up, and we will tell you about them here on East West Audio Body Shop.
Indeed.
You know, actually, I'm, you know, my son Jacob, who's making our cartoons, we're going to show one at the end of the show. He keeps coming up here saying, I got to borrow your booth.
Oh, you know? Is that right?
Oh, yeah. And he's like, well, I'm like, I don't want it. Nobody touches my computer. Nobody touches it. So finally, I decided that he's getting one of my porta booths.
Right on.
We're going to take that down there. And it's like, record to your heart's delight because you've got a Harlan Hogan porta booth.
Killer, man. What are you going to put in there? What hand-me-down equipment are you going to give him for?
I've got him on an AT3035 with a Micport Pro.
It's a good piece. So,
and yeah, the thing is it's apparently very sensitive because, you know, when we're eating dinner, he still has his friends on Skype and they hear everything we're saying at the dinner table.
Yeah.
So once we throw him in the porta booth, that won't be a problem.
That'll help a little bit.
Yes. Anyway, thank you, Harlan, for being with us for 164 episodes.
Years.
You have.
Yeah, tonight it feels like one of those years.
It's getting there. Anyway.
Holy crap. Have you seen all the questions that we have came? We've got about at least eight or nine.
A few have popped in here, yes. Yeah. Why don't we start off? Our guest is Townsend Coleman. If you're just tuning in, who would just be tuning in now? They've been missing the greatest show ever.
If you had to go eat dinner or something with the family and you're just tuning in now, Townsend Coleman's here.
And let's go to the audience questions. Starting off with Steve Gonzalez. What was your life in a day like when you were in TMNT?
Say it again.
What was your life in a day like when you were in TMNT?
Okay, got it.
Yeah, that boy, what great days those were. That would, you know, that was in the early 90s. And just before I got TMNT, I was doing a show called Fraggle Rock. And yes. And I was doing a character Gobo on that, which was the only voice match character I've ever done before, because I'm a terrible mimic, and I'm not an impressionist at all. You know, you got these brilliant guys like Maurice and, you know, Jeff Bennett and all these guys who do these great impressions. That's not me. But so I was doing Fraggle Rock, and Stu Rosen, the voice director of Fraggle Rock, came into a session one day and pulled a copy of the Ninja Turtles comic book out of his briefcase and said, "Hey, look what I'm going to be directing next. You guys." And so he brought us into audition for it, and Rob Paulson and I who were doing Fraggle Rock together at the time, both got parts on it. And so we started doing that show. And, you know, that was when I was fortunate enough to have gotten in over at NBC and was doing a lot of commercial work as well, and had some great commercial clients like Home Depot. I was the voice of Home Depot for about 7 or 8 years, and had standing sessions in those days over at LA Studios every morning at 9. And so that, yeah, a day in the life back then, it was so different than what it's like now, because, you know, I would go over to LA Studios and do my Home Depot sessions, and then, you know, for sort of go from session to session and studio to studio back in the days when we'd actually do that. And yeah, and then, you know, to spend the 3 or 4 hours over at Screen Music in Studio City, you know, reading those wacky Ninja Turtles scripts from David Wise and company. It was crazy. I mean, you know, doing animation is so much fun because, you know, that's the one place where you're not alone, and you don't do it, you know, from the isolation of your closet at home, but you're in the studio and ensemble with, you know, all these other, you know, incredibly talented, you know, facile, quick-witted, funny, hilarious people. I would just sort of take a back seat and watch the show unfold. But it was wild and huge fun. You know, none of us at the time, I think, you know, had any sense of how big this thing was going to become. But once we started getting a sense of that, we were starting to have a sense of awe at how big it was, and, you know, how important the fans were to the success of this show. And we would start getting, you know, fan mail and fan letters and stuff, and you know, getting in touch with these people early on, and you know, it's just such a blessing. I mean, it's such a great way to make a living. I'd be lying if I said that it wasn't. You know, it's a blast. It's the best, you know, job on the planet.
Yep.
So I don't know if that answers your question,
works for me. J.S. Gilbert. Next question.
All right.
J.S. Gilbert.
He's pouring his heart out. Guys.
I know.
That's all right.
He asked, did the folks at DIC make life miserable for voice talent?
No, he's talking about Deke. Well, no, you know, my experience with them was that was my very first show, because they produced Inspector Gadget. And I'll never forget the day that I auditioned in March of 85 for Marsha Goodman over there. I was coming off this callback for an on-camera national commercial that I ended up getting. And I was in this silly costume outfit looking like Jimmy Olsen from the, you know, Superman movies, you know, big right. round glasses and the bow tie and stuff. And I was so high, naturally, from coming off this callback audition for that on camera spot that I knew that I got. And you know how, as a performer, when you know you just killed something, it's like nothing can bring you down. I ended up driving straight from that audition over to the studio over at Deke for this Inspector Gadget audition. And I had never auditioned for a cartoon before. And I walk in and they, you know, give you a picture and a, you know, a little description of the character and then some sample lines. And I remember in those days, Marsha literally was recording us on a cassette recorder in this like little conference room. And I went in, you know, did my audition. She liked what I did, and they were laughing, you know, which is always a good sign. And so I did a little more for them. You know, several days later, they booked me, and I went in and did that first session that I was, you know, talking about with Mo and Frank and my buddy Don Adams, you know, over here. And so that was my experience with Deke. They were terrific to me. So, you know, maybe there's something out there that people, you know, weren't as pleased with or easy to work for or whatever, but my experience with them was just terrific. Yeah, I had a blast doing that show.
Maybe JS didn't have that good time with them. Who knows?
JS,
I'm a little fearful here that I'm going to be set up for something.
No,
I'm going to say something, you know, just something nasty about somebody that, but
See, it's because Jay. That's because Townsend knows you never burn a bridge.
That's right.
Shelley Apollino voiceovers question for Townsend. I remember you doing the voice for Gobo on Fraggle Rock a long time ago, and it was the first real voice I tried to imitate. What character? What character has been the most difficult for you to create, and why?
Wow, difficult to create. I think probably the ones that were the most difficult for me to create were the ones that I didn't get, you know, and I didn't get them because I
makes sense.
I had a hard time trying to create them. You know, the ones that I ended up getting somehow seemed to just sort of fall out of me. You know, I don't know that I had a terribly difficult time creating them. And I think, that's, you know, probably why I got them.
That's a good point. Like if you have a really difficult time creating and then maintaining a character, how are you going to make it through the audition process?
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, there have been plenty of those, you know, that I've tried to create and just, you know, I remember years ago getting an audition for this thing called Animaniac. And it was for this place called Warner Brothers, and Steven Spielberg was going to be producing this thing, and they had this character Wacko in there, and I thought, well, I could probably do some kind of sort of wacky, so I came up with some thing, probably, you know, very typical, you know, vanilla-y, you know, Wacko thing that I did, and you know, come to find out that I didn't get it, and I, you know, I remember the character saying "Hello, nurse," and I tried, you know, to come up with something for that. And then when I saw who got it, and it was Jess Harnell and Rob Paulsen doing Yakko, I just went, "Well, of course," you know. And then when I heard what they did, and it wasn't anything like at all what you know I would have imagined. This is where you see the genius of these guys, you know, that they take something, you know, where I would sort of think of it in a very sort of normal fashion, you know, or for sort of very safe, you know, boxy fashion, and they just like go to the moon with it, and you know, it becomes what it becomes. And
if you're gonna lose a part to somebody, at least guys who are like extremely talented, right?
Yeah, lose it to Jess Harnell or right. Rob Paulsen. Yeah.
Right. At least you were in the running. You were in the same category.
Oh no, I wasn't. I got the audition. My agent sent me the audition. That's as close as I got to being in the same category. But yeah, so that I mean, those are the hardest characters created. So, the ones that I didn't get,
because
that's why.
Right.
So. All right. Anthony Gettig asks, jumping a little over to promo here, what time of the year is best to market to people that hire promo voices?
These days, I don't know that I don't know if there's a best time of year because we sort of lost track of what seasons used to be, you know, and I think we still have, at least with the major networks, season launch stuff that happens in September. But even that's starting to kind of fade away and go to more of a year round thing or multiple seasons and multiple season launches and stuff. So in terms of a time of year to be able to promote yourself to somebody who does promos, I would say if you had to, you know, in the early summer, the major networks still do what they call upfronts every May. And so in May, they, you know, will haul out their, you know, dog and pony show and they're you know, put on the big, you know, three ring circus for their advertisers and all the new shows and break out all the new shows that they're going to be debuting in the fall. That's a really good time to try and, you know, hit the networks if you can. But goodness, this is assuming you have an agent and, you know, got a way of getting your great demo in front of these people through an agent, you know, so that they can hear your stuff.
No, there's a lot more questions about promo. So, because this is like one of those, you know, mecca of the voiceover world for a lot of people that don't, you know, especially that those that don't live in LA.
Right.
And this is about your voice. Do you do dark dramatic as well as the comedy? And do you switch back and forth easily?
I don't do the drama stuff. I don't know that I would be very good at it. I don't think I have that kind of read. It's interesting. I've taught promo workshops before, and I take along some drama read to also in the actual spot that they can read to. And we've talked about this, and I think I have too much energy. And I think I have too much smile in my voice. Typically, I've often been told to, you know, try and take some of the smile out of my voice, which is sometimes a mystery to me because I'm trying to figure out what element that is in my voice that that has that sparkle or that smile thing, you know, that gets through. So I don't do the dark stuff, the drama stuff. I've kind of never marketed myself like that. I've tried to do it before, you know, record myself doing some. It just always sounds like I'm either trying too hard or just
you're putting it on or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It sort of doesn't fit me. Mm-hmm. But
that was
was coming from a drama promo producer for the major network. Wanting to know if I could do that because they had something to throw my way. No, I really can't. I can do this really well.
Well, that was from Tom Daniels. He also followed up with, this question comes up pretty much every time we have promo folks on. Do you think it's still an exclusive club or is there room for more people? I mean, do you have to be in LA? How do you get into this market if you're not in LA?
Well, you don't have to be in LA because some of the workingest guys in promo aren't in LA. It seems like they're all in Florida. You know, you got Brian Lee and Chris Corley down there, and of course Randy Thomas, and probably more folk I'm thinking of. But you don't have to be in LA. That's one of the great things about promo. Tom Kane. You know, Kansas City. It's one of the great things about VO is you don't necessarily have to be in LA unless you want to do animation. If you want to do animation, you got to be here. But for promo and stuff, no, you don't have to be here. And I would say it probably still is kind of an exclusive club. But by saying that, I don't mean, you know, come on in, we got a clubhouse and there's only three of us here who do all this stuff. You know, there's always new guys coming on board. I mean, they're guys doing it that I'm not even aware of. You know, I know their voices, but I don't know who they are. I don't really watch TV that much anyway. So, you know, I sort of cloister myself. That was probably not a good thing. But the other thing is that Tom, was that question from Tom?
Tom Daniels.
I think that when it comes to the networks, you know, the ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox kind of stuff, that's still pretty sort of rarefied territory, you know, and I'm really, really lucky. Listen, I was lucky to, you know, luck into that thing back in 93 to begin with, but then to have been there for 16 years and then let go. And they were so gracious to me when they let me go. I mean, they threw me a going away party and everything. It was unbelievable. I mean, I loved those. That was my family there for such a long time. But now to find myself doing stuff for another one of the major networks over ABC now, doing some comedy stuff there, it's just crazy to me that, you know, that I could have been identified one network for so long and then now find myself, you know, at one of the other networks. And I'm just really, really lucky. And I love the people that I've worked with over the years and having these connections. But doggone it, you know, there's really just a handful of people. I was going to say guys, but it's not just guys anymore. You know, thanks to Anna Vosino, who's doing stuff over at ABC now on Thursday nights, the Shonda Rhimes block. But you know, it's still a fairly small group of folks who are doing the kind of the high end network stuff. That said, there are a million networks now. You know, there's so much promo work being done, you know, and so for like the first run syndication stuff that I do for, you know, Live with Kelly and Michael every day or the, you know, the cable network stuff that I do I used to do for the Hub and ABC Family, you know, and, you know, all the Discovery networks. And I'm not going to start. I mean, you guys know how many, you know, channels are out there and they've all got. And they're all doing promos. They're all using promo people. So You know, there's a lot of that.
Diana, you brought up women. Diana Birdsall really? Says, this, you know, do you think there's more and more room for women in promo? Does it seem to be? You don't watch a lot of TV, so maybe you're not paying attention to the trend. But
yeah, but I sort of pay attention to what's going on in our biz. You know, so when I hear about stuff, and this whole thing with Anna doing the ABC block. I mean, I read an article, a full on article about what a big deal that was, that they're now using a woman for this block of shows, you know, Grey's Anatomy and those shows on Thursday night, you know, TGIT over on ABC. What a huge deal it is that they're using a woman for that. And sort of the idea in this article was that, yes, there is room. There's the desire. There's a need for to hear more female voices on the air. And I agree. You know, it's like, you know, why is it just exclusively, a man's domain doing this network promo stuff? And it's becoming less so. I think that's cool.
Yep. Yeah. And a lot of great gals out there doing that kind of stuff. Oh,
yeah. Boy, howdy.
Devox asks, anything interesting or unusual you do to prepare or warm up or work out your voice?
Sure. You want to hear it?
Sure. Go for it.
Okay. Give me a second.
Works for me.
Okay, so there's that. Then there's also this.
What are you doing?
So there's that.
No. So that's just a normal day in my house.
I just did everything that every singing teacher and every voice teacher
don't do that
ever do. That's the stuff that I do. So, you know, I try
and stay away from the rule book on that one.
I try to stay away from like cheese and dairy, kind of, sort of, you know, the stuff that's going to gunk my throat up. I try and stay away from, because then what it does is then I get this like coating over my throat, and then I have no bottom end, and then I can't, you know,
right,
get down here where I'd like to get down. Well, you know, down there. But I mean, that's the stuff. I mean, I really do. I mean, there are times when I scream and I clear my throat and I got to, you know, snort and do whatever I got to do to get all the things working the right way. But that's me. You know, I sort of developed, you know, kind of, I've said in the past, vocal cords of leather. You know, in this business, you got to be able to work around all those little, you know, areas of your voice where if you do start to lose your voice, you can hopefully still work and find some, you know, little range, whether it's higher or lower than that spot you just lost. And God, I hate it when that happens. But yeah, so that's my big warm up routine.
I'm gonna try that tomorrow morning.
Well, it's just
a big help, isn't it? Yeah, and then you just breathe like an emphysema. Oh, that's good.
So Sergeant,
that's rich.
Sergeant Sill, he asked about, does this animation ever abuse your voice when you do screams or the noises?
I'll tell you,
callous for some of
them. Yeah, sure. You got to, you know, learn how to be able to scream effectively. You know, if I do video games, you know, it's on a Friday afternoon, hopefully, you know, when I can have the weekend to rest, you know, because it seems like video games now is just nothing but, you know, screaming and or at least the ones that I've done, and I don't do many of them anymore, but it's a lot of that stuff that will rip your throat to shreds, you know. I remember, and here's a little tip. Don't ever, if you're going to audition for specifically in animation, if you can audition for a character that you come up with this, you know, crazy idea that I think he ought to sound like this, you know, and it's, you're pitching your voice off like this, and it hurts a little bit to do it, but you think I can get through it, so you do the audition, right? And then you realize, and then you get the part, and then you can't sustain it. Yeah, and then, really, like, you know, 20 minutes into that first session, and you're going, I can't talk anymore. Be careful of that. Don't do that. Yeah.
Are you a musician too? Bill Russell is one of our VO and musician people. You have that bass. Do you play it as well?
I have this bass because, well, I was telling George earlier, I used to be a studio owner 20 years ago, and Burbank had the first digital dub stage in LA. It was called Digimix, and my partner, Dub Pierce, Honest to God, it's his name, Doug.
Doug Pierce, okay. Yeah.
But really, Doug Pierce, he's a genius. He's a bass, not only a bass player, but a bass maker, as well as this tech genius guru. And so he was the tech genius behind Digimix. And he was doing, it turned out that he was doing all the dialogue editing on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles when I was doing Michelangelo. And we met, became friends, and decided to open this little studio together. And it was right when Pro Tools was coming out. And he got the editorial house that he was working at up on Pro Tools, and then came up with this idea to do a digital dubstage. So we started this thing called Digimix. Well, along with that, Dub is also a bass maker, and he came up with this great idea. He loves playing a five string. He loves the sound of a five string bass, but doesn't like the tone of that fifth string. So he came up with this thing called a D bass, which is actually a five string bass with only four strings at a very small headstock. So that's why, no. So the easy answer to that question is no, I'm not a musician, but this is because I was a partner with Dub in this D-bass company that was selling these D-basses. He gave me the first one off the line. Oh, and George is going to show me the, is that the guitar you made? Sweet.
Oh, yeah, that, neither am I, but I have a guitar sitting here.
Yeah, so that's why I have the bass. I play hand drums. I love hand drums. It's got, you know, cajon box and djembes and that kind of thing. But and I sing a little bit, but like cartoon sing, you know, some stage, you know.
So you do? Did you get to sing on Fraggle Rock? Somebody asked about that.
I did. I sang a couple of songs on Fraggle Rock, yeah, as Gobo, and I did three characters on that. I did Gobo, you know.
Oh, Wembley, you're right, Gust. Allergies all in your head. We're going to go exploring in outer space with my uncle Traveling Matt. You know, so, yeah, so I got to sing some songs as Gobo, along with, not only that, but the theme song. Remember the theme song over the opening credits, Fraggle Rock? Yeah, we got to sing that. I've got that all on videotape.
Oh.
And that's a classic session. I keep swearing I'm going to digitize it and put it on Facebook one day. But so, yeah, and so Gobo and Architect was another character I did on that. So, yes, I did some singing on Fraggle Rock. I had fun doing
it. Excellent, man. That was Bill asked about that, too.
Yeah. Well, I think we've reached the end of the questions.
Gosh,
here.
Yes.
I'm sure there's billions more out there in people's minds, but they're just too shy to type them.
Oh. And it's because they're evildoers, Dan. You don't seem to understand.
And we also like to keep people in mind that we've had Townsend now on the line for over 2 hours.
Oh, but that's okay. Hold on. You know what? We don't mind. We simply say...
Dude,
yeah, the greatest part of that is getting to voice action figures and going into Toys R Us.
Apparently,
yeah.
All right, we have it with most of us here. Anyway, hey, it has been great having you on, and
it's been bodacious, Dan.
It's true. I'm sorry, you didn't get
it. Yeah, no, not just great. It's been like totally bodacious. In fact, I have to hear you say, "Cowabunga!"
Cowabunga!
George, very nice.
Cowabunga!
Yeah, when you get that roadkill off your mic, I'll feel a whole lot safer for you.
So, one last question. Are you teaching at all?
You know, I don't teach down here. I go up to Sausalito, up to the San Francisco area, and teach for Samantha Paris every so often. Yeah, and have fun doing that. People have asked me about that, and I think maybe down the road it's something I might consider doing down here. But right now, nah.
If you don't need to do it, then don't do it.
Right.
All right. Townsend, thanks so much for being on the show. You've been fabulous.
And Dan, thank you.
Always great to see that, you know, get the insight from the inside to see. Sometimes it's just a matter of being in the right place at the right time, but the harder you work, the luckier you get.
Well, and you got to be ready to deliver the goods if you get the call. So, yeah, make sure you're ready.
Outstanding. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks, George.
Hey, all right. All right, we'll be right back and clean things up right after that.
We all agree that iTunes is one of the best ways to listen to
music. Did I leave it that messy?
No, not at all.
to wipe them.
E-Web's essential.
We all agree that iTunes is one of the best ways to listen to music, right? Well, what if your voiceover demos could be presented the exact same way, where each clip inside your demo is listed as a clickable, playable track? Well, now you can, if your demo is presented with the interactive demo player only from VoiceXAMM. In VoiceXAMM, each track inside your demo is clearly titled for producers to view, select, and play. Now, we all know that producers will only listen to the first few tracks of your demos, right? But not on VoiceXAMM. With VoiceXAMM, producers can interact with your demo, clicking on what they want to hear. They'll stay longer, listening to all your voice work because they want to. Plus, with VoiceXAMM's exclusive XAMMtistics, you'll know exactly what they listen to, when, and for how long. So why not give producers a chance to hear all your voice work with VoiceXAMM? Go to VoiceXAMM.com and sign up now. Plus, get an exclusive 45-day trial when you use the promo code EWABS. VoiceOver Extra, the voiceover industry's online news, education, and resource center 24-7. Hundreds, probably thousands of free how-to articles for voiceover success, ranging from home studio to voice acting to business. A free voiceover industry directory, calendar of industry events, resource links, a store, and much more. Bi-monthly webinars on all topics of voiceover, free subscriptions to newsletters, reports, announcements, daily news, and features at voiceoverextra.com.
And now, back to East West Audio Body Shop, where every week, it's Apollo 13.
Yeah, I guess that's pretty much the case this week.
Yeah, this week would not be an exception. It's been an interesting one.
It has.
Hopefully most of it you didn't even notice.
Yes.
If we're really lucky.
Totally seamless. Especially if you're listening in your car, you'd have no idea. But anyway, let's see here. Announcements. It's time for we haven't played the announcements.
You know what? We haven't.
Bumper in a while.
We should throw that one in there. Here it is.
Just sit back and relax. It's time for some announcements.
All right.
Hey.
All right. You got to meet her at the picnic.
Rosemary Benson.
Yes.
What a cool chick.
She was there. She is. Very nice. Okay. First, we have to thank our donors. Guys, we have no idea how much we appreciate it. It is a huge help to keeping this show commercial, and I mean national commercial free, just the stuff you guys want to see, which is voiceover stuff commercials.
Yeah.
And if you want to donate, you can, here we are on NPR. You can donate as little as a dollar a month, but we'd like more. But there's a donate button right above George's head there if you're watching on the EWABS page. And you can donate to the show so we can keep this thing running properly.
Maybe we'll hire some help.
Yeah. Yes.
For me. Yeah. Mike Martin, he's donated. Thank you. Eric Aragone.
Eric Aragone
absolutely doesn't miss a week. Don Griffith, Amy Serenzi. Oh boy, fail. But yeah, we've gotten a lot of them. Diana Birdsall, Maria Mackis, Be For Real Voiceover. Oh my gosh, we have a lot of them coming in. So thank you guys. Appreciate it.
Yeah, greatly appreciated. Also, our YouTube channel. You can now, if you miss the show tonight, why are you listening to me now? But right. if you do miss the show, all 164 episodes, including the amazing first episode of EWABS, is on YouTube. So
you really need to watch the first episode to appreciate where we are now.
We've come in such a long time.
I think so, yeah. The podcast version, a lot of you listen to the show in podcast format, which works great when you're mowing the lawn, commuting, washing the dishes. We can get that on Stitcher Radio, iTunes, and Podbean through our own channel, ewabs.podbean.com. And we have a new sponsor, who is narratorhelper.com.
I will personally vouch for Amy, who does a great job of, if you're doing an audiobook and you want to send it to your producer, error free, she's the one that will help you get there.
It's all about the workflow, good communication. Yep. Amy's got all that. And let me just, you know, PSA.
PSA.
You know, if you're starting your first audiobook, I don't care if you've been recording voiceover, a narration, promo, commercial, e-learn, whatever, for 25 years, don't plunge headfirst into your first audiobook without consulting with somebody that's done it many times and knows what you need to know beforehand. Because what tends to happen is you overthink every single word or phrase, and you overedit, and you invest entirely too much time on something that's a marathon, not a sprint. Just a little PSA for those who are looking at doing audiobooks. But find someone like Amy at narratorhelper.com to help you through the minefields, at least on that first project.
Yes. And it is officially Movember. Now, I'm not allowed to participate in Movember, but George is on the Movo's team. Donate to support men's health research at us.movember.com/team/ get this number down, 1579149.
Or if you go to Movember.com, just type in Movos in the search. You'll find us up there.
Yeah. So the thing with Movember is you have to shave off your mustache or beard and grow it again. It ain't happening here. So I just like take out my wallet. How much you guys want?
Yeah, right, exactly.
And I'll help out any way I can. Next week, I will not be here because I'm playing Mayor Shin and the Music Man at the Riviera Theater in lovely downtown Tonawanda, New York. It's actually a great place. But we're rehearsing that night, and we really need it. No, eventually, I'm going to learn my lines for this. You know, 4 score. Anyway, so
I think it's going to be me and John Taylor hanging out.
Oh, we haven't had John Taylor
for
on
the
for a
show.
Long time.
Yeah, he's we miss him. So absolutely. John's going to be on holding it down with me. I don't know who the guest is going to be. Maybe we don't need a guest because we got John.
Just have John talk for an hour and a half.
Exactly.
No problem. He's never had a problem with that
before.
We'll
just do his morning show for an hour and a half.
Yes. November 17th, you're going to be in Florida.
Yeah, we're going to do one from Doug Turkel's home. Again, we're kind of working out the details as to who we're going to have on some of these episodes. Right now, for us, it's just figuring out the logistics because I'm going to be not doing it from home. But I got a new idea for that show as to how I'm going to do it from the road. And we're going to do it live on the air just like we do every week. We're going to test something new in real time. I'm not going to tell you what it is because it may not work.
Okay. Anyway. Thanks for warning me.
I think we're going to have Harlan on November 24th.
Outstanding. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, if you got any suggestions, anything you want to hear about, a guest you'd like to see on the show who's still alive, send it into ewabshop@gmail.com. And of course, we'll take your questions. We need your questions because that's what this show is all about. Your personal studios and
fuel that keeps the show moving forward.
That's right. And of course, the amazing guests we have, like Townsend Coleman, who we had tonight. Anyway, that's going to do it for us. We'd like to thank all of the people that make this show possible, of course. Let's see if I can remember. Oh, I'm sorry. Our wives, because they let us do this at home every week. Mm-hmm. Wait till we have our own studio. They're not going to be able to like look in the window or anything and like
that's
keep
right.
an eye on
them. I can't wait.
So, of course, thanks to them. Kathy Curden, who did a great job getting our guests on here. Anthony Gettig for helping out in the chat room, getting all the questions on. And Lee Pinney for stepping in and pinch hitting for him tonight. Jack DeGolia for the great job he does on the show notes. If you want to find out anything that's happened on any EWAB show, check out Jack's show notes. They're fabulous. It'll help you find what you're looking for. And Tim McKean for EWAB's Essentials that he's working on, and Lee Pinney for getting our podcast out there. And that's going to do it for us this week. Now, I want to leave you with something.
Yes.
My son, Jacob, who's into animation and stuff like that, this is something, it was a cartoon that he originally came up with, and it was about 10 seconds long. I said, you got to make it longer than that. I mean, you got to take the joke and drag it out. So we spent about 2 months really working on this, and we'll show you this as we're tuning out here. But we'll say goodnight for now, but stay tuned for this. I'm Dan Leonard in the East.
And I'm George Whittam in the West.
And together we are East West Audio Body Shop. Pop. Good night, everybody. I'll see you in 2 weeks, but we'll see you next week.
Take care, everybody. Okay. All right, there it is. I'll cut our mics.
Excuse me, sir, but are you a wizard?
Yeah.
Wizards grant wishes. This could be my chance to wish for a second arm. I wish I had a second arm.
That's great, kid.
Are you going to grant my wish? I didn't need a second arm. I was born without one. It's kind of sad. Oh, come on, sir. Please, oh, please. I need an arm. I need a second arm.
Damn, I wish this light would change already.
Without one. Come on, man. All the things I could do with two arms. I could golf, type, read the newspaper, use a phone, play the oboe, do brain surgery, shell pistachios. Come on, man. I really need two arms. Come on, come on, please, please. Grab my wish. I need...
This kid ever shut up?
You're a wizard. You can grant wishes. Come on.
Do I look like a genie?
What?
Do I look like a genie?
Well,
No! Wizards don't grant wishes. You know what we do? We cast spells like this.
What is it? Everybody thinks I'm a genie.
Well, guess I missed my one arm. Oh, well. It'll do for now.